The Senate is back in session. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of introduction of introduction of bills.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the 10th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send your bill forward with a truck. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 872, introduced by Senator Justice, an act relating to an act for the sole purpose of restructuring the Missouri Criminal Code.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
Yes, Mr. President, and many of you may have received visits yesterday from the prosecutors from your counties. Over the last year, a group of prosecutors and criminal defense lawyers have sat down to actually restructure the criminal code. It's something that is long overdue. It's something that's going to take, obviously, a lot of discussion and preparation before we pass it as a body, but I think it's time. It's been, I don't know how many years since we have undertaken this measure, but I think that it's something that we need to start the conversation on, and I'd be happy to answer any questions offline or online if anyone has any. Thanks.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cape.
To inquire the senator from, are you from Callaway now?
Is that one?
Next year, you'll be from Callaway. Senator that will be from
Senator,
Callaway.
Senator,
I do yield.
She yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you for yielding. I wanted to make sure I understand. I don't want to belabor this, but this bill is the prosecutor's rewrite of the criminal code?
The prosecutors and the criminal defense lawyers sat down together over the course of the last year, and this is the result of their work product.
Okay.
I brought up the prosecutors because yesterday many were in town for a convention, and many of them came to our offices specifically to talk about this bill, and this is the one that they were talking about.
Okay. And I don't want to get into it. I guess we'll have some time at some point to talk and debate about the legislation that is in there. Is this more crimes, less crimes? Because if the prosecutors had anything to do with it, there's probably now court costs for their retirement and all sorts of stuff that's buried in there. Are there any court costs?
I can't answer the question about whether there's any court costs. The answer to the first part of your question, more crimes, less crimes, is yes to both, I'm sure. The reality is that they've completely restructured everything, and it's something that, for those of us who are interested in it, and I know that you are one of
right.
them, we've got an amazing chart that's been drawn up by Legislative Research. They have gone through line by line and explained everything, and I think that's why I wanted to get it on file. I know that this is going to be a long process to get this done, but there's a lot of stuff in there.
And I assume at some point, and I haven't talked to the pro tem, but I assume at some point this will get referred to committee. It's your intention to do this to the Judiciary Committee, I would assume.
That would be my hope for it to go to the Judiciary Committee.
I would just hope that we could work with leadership or something to know when that is coming, because that's a committee hearing on judiciary that I know I would like to attend. I don't know if the chairman or yourself would make that available to more of us and understand when this is going through, because I know this ties in with what we're going to go to this afternoon, Senate Bill 699. Some of us would like to see us carry on in what the senator from the 8th, Matt Bartle, was talking about, in that, you know, there are some crimes that are on the book, and even though people may want to call us weak on crime, that don't need to be crimes anymore. And that's really where we're going to get savings within the correctional centers and things, not so much, you know, saying, ooh, if we spend $10 million today, we'll realize savings and lower recidivism rates. I've been here a decade plus 2 years, and I've heard and seen many bills that are passed with that intention. And the last I checked in the appropriations process, prison costs are going like this, not like this.
Oh, Senator, I also participated in the process this summer for the bill that we're going to be talking about
sure.
next year on the floor. It's been one of my top priorities since Judge Price brought it to this legislature 2 or 3 years ago. I was a co-sponsor with Senator Bartle on the bill, and I'm wholeheartedly behind that as well. That is my top priority, and that's what my hope that this could complement the legislation that we're talking about here today. I'm also fully aware that it's a 1,000-page bill, and that it's going to take a lot of time to digest, and so I wanted to go ahead and get it on file. Sure. So that we can start having the conversation, because I, like you, want to reduce the costs in a meaningful way, and just adding new laws is not going to do that.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the First, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 873, introduced by Senator Lemke, an act relating to real estate appraisers.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
No explanation necessary, Mr. President. While I've got your attention, though, could I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests?
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Have you noticed that the microphone system seems to be working much better than in the past? You notice where I have this microphone in relation to my mouth?
Gotcha.
And how well the sound is in here?
It always works.
And how much I like to listen to myself speak, Mr. President. Have you ever noticed that?
Learning, Senator, learning.
My guess, I was really just kind of stalling here. Mr. President, I want to introduce some very special guests that are visiting the Capitol today from South County. Actually, the sister of my chief of staff, Jamie. Her name is Katie Erdley, and she's here with her children, Toby, Lizzie, and Ellie, and they were just right over here. They're as cute as can be. They were getting their pictures taken right here on the side of the gallery, but I guess they've gone. But if the body could make them feel welcome, I'm sure they'll be back. Thank you, Mr. President.
On the order of business of introduction of bills, Senator from Jefferson was the first one I saw seeking recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 874, introduced by Senator McKenna, an act relating to property assessment clean energy.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
This is just an act that changes part of our statutes. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Lawrence, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have one bill.
Send your bill forward.
Or better.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 875, introduced by Senator Goodman, an act relating to personal funeral trust accounts.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill? Senator from Cole was the next one I saw seeking recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. Very observant. I have a bill.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 876, introduced by Senators Kehoe and Parson, an act relating to beer wholesalers.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
No, sir. I'm looking forward to Senator McKenna engaging in this debate of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator from the 15th was the next one seeking
thank
recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd ask for unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my left, on your right, are some good friends of mine here from St. Louis. Brent Wiley, George Restovich, Dan Genovese, Troy Walton, John Carmody, Dan Walsh are all here. I could do a roast, probably, and really extend this debate for a long time, but I won't. They're some of my best friends in the world, and they're up here. We're going to see the Mizzou Tigers play tonight, and I would ask this body make them feel welcome as they join us from St.
Louis. Would the guests of the Senator from the 15th please rise and the body make them feel welcome. Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Please send your two bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bills.
Senate Bill 877, introduced by Senator Mayer. An act relating to the reporting by each state department of the number of employees within each department.
Senator, would you like to explain that bill?
Certainly, Mr. President. Having served on the Appropriations Committee for 6 years and served as the chair of that committee, it was always frustrating from time to time to see that a certain amount of FTEs had been assigned to different departments and actually wanting to know how many employees at any given time were employed by the different state departments. It was difficult to get that information. What this bill does is says that each quarter, each department of state government has to report to the pro tem and to the Speaker of the House exactly how many actual individuals, how many persons are actually there, live bodies, working in those different departments each quarter.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill 878, introduced by Senator Mayer, an act relating to workers' compensation.
Mr. President, just a bill to deal with the workers' comp reform if it's needed.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Christian, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Please send your bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bills.
Senate Bill 879, introduced by Senator Wasson. An act relating to the issuance of certain motor vehicle titles to insurers who purchase motor vehicles through the claims adjustment process.
Senator.
No explanation.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill 880, introduced by Senator Wasson. An act relating to physician assistance.
No explanation.
Senator, we're on the order of business of introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Due to the size of Senate Bill 872, I would request unanimous consent of the Senate to suspend Senate Rule 49, requiring printing the introduced copy in 8.5 by 11 pamphlet form.
Is this a consent motion? Hearing no objection, so that will be, the request will be granted.
Thank you, senators. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar.
Senate bill, we're on the order of business, Senate bills for perfection, formal calendar, Senate Bill 727. Senator from the Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. Please lay that bill on the informal calendar.
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 710, Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could you lay that bill on the informal calendar?
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 635, Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please lay Senate Bill 635 on the informal calendar, please?
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 717. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please place that bill on the informal calendar?
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senate Bill, SJR 37, Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Mr. President. Please lay that bill on the informal calendar.
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 699, Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask that the Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 699 be brought before the body.
You heard the motion of the Senator from Lawrence. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now have a Senate floor substitute. It is 12F. I'd like to offer it and move for its adoption.
Senator,
yes.
We need to have you move the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute.
Move for the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute.
Now, Senator, if you'd like to send your Senate substitute forward, we can do that.
Thank you. I send it forward. I move its adoption, and I request a waiver of the reading as it has been distributed.
Hearing no objection, Senator, the reading will be waived. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill, Senate Bill 699, is known as the Justice Reinvestment Act. It is the result of months of cooperative work, reaching a consensus by a group that was known as the Missouri Working Group on Sentencing and Corrections. This was a...
We need to hold the conversations down so we can hear the Senator's explanation. Proceed, Senator.
Thank you. It was a bipartisan group having representatives from all three branches of government, legislative, executive, judicial, Republicans, Democrats. We also had a local task force that was augmenting the work that this working group was doing. That task force consisted of victims, advocates, folks from the victims' community, prosecutors, public defenders, sheriffs, judges, police, and county officials. And we also had a great deal of citizen input from all across the state of Missouri. We had the primary goals of improving public safety across the state by reinvesting what we hoped would be some savings in the correction system into strategies that would reduce crime and recidivism in Missouri. We've seen, as we went through this data-driven process, and really some data that was called to our attention to start this process, we've seen that Missouri's been spending a lot more on sentencing and corrections, but we haven't been getting a better result for the Missouri taxpayers' dollars. We've seen in Missouri that from 1990 to the present, Missouri's prison population has roughly doubled from 14,074 people in 1990 to 30,729 people in 2011. We saw that of those making up this population, about three-quarters of the admissions to prison in 2010 were for revocations of probation and parole. Of those who were being revoked, 83% of those offenders were on probation or parole for a nonviolent offense. We also saw in the state of Missouri that we have a significantly longer probation term than most other states around the country, average 4.5 years. Yet most of the revocations of our probationers and parolees occur in the first year, almost half, and the vast majority occur within the second year, or within the first 2 years, I'm sorry. We looked at a lot of data from around the country. We looked at practices in Missouri that were working well. We looked at practices around the nation that also were working well. We looked at things in Missouri that did not work well, and we tried to learn from mistakes made in other parts of the country as well. What we saw was that while we are spending a lot more money in Missouri, our recidivism rate was not coming down. That means that while we are spending about 249% more dollars than we were in 1990, the people in our communities, the seniors, the children, the families, our neighbors, are not any safer than they were when we were spending less money. So we needed to look at what are we doing that doesn't work, or what are we not doing that would work. This bill contains three lessons learned, as well as an attempt to include accountability measures and see if the things we try here, if it passes, would succeed. First of all, we saw that in the universe of offenders who are on probation or parole, what makes those individuals less likely to reoffend is facing a swift and certain sanction for their violation or for their misconduct. In Missouri, we were not effectively providing the swift and certain sanctions. Let me put this in sort of in parenting terms that a lot of us here can relate to, whether you're a parent or an aunt or an uncle or you've been a kid. If I've got my boys, my sons, and they want a piece of candy that's on the counter, and I tell them they can't have it, and if you take it, you're going to get in a timeout right now, they're less likely to take that candy than they would be if I said, if you take that candy, you might have a timeout next year if I remember to deal with you then. Under that latter scenario, my kids, although they're good kids, I think would take the candy, have the satisfaction of eating that candy right now, and hope that either I don't get around to dealing with them in a year, or that they will have already had the satisfaction and that year-away threat is not a big deal right now, or maybe they could persuade me by good behavior right up before that year comes not to punish them. We have a similar scenario going on in Missouri today with those who violate probation and parole. They violate today. They're not These offenders are not coming forward before the courts or before the board for their probation violation or parole violation hearing for months, sometimes for more than a year. That is not providing a good deterrent effect to those who would violate. We are also seeing that we don't have a good sort of middle ground penalty to impose for those who are they're violating to the extent that we don't want to just continue them on probation, but perhaps we're not to the point of wanting to send them to corrections for the entire duration of their original sentence, which is going to cost, in many cases, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've seen that in states around the nation where they provide a good incentive for offenders to be accountable for their own behavior, improve their behavior, become law-abiding, productive citizens, where those incentives are provided, people are less likely to reoffend. And we also saw very compelling evidence that if you can have a probationer or parolee get through a period of 2 years of supervision without reoffending, they are dramatically less likely to ever break the law again, dramatically more likely to become law-abiding, productive citizens, hopefully paying taxes rather than consuming them. The states that have done well with this have provided motivation and incentive for probationers and parolees to do well. To address some of these failures in our current system in Missouri, first, this bill provides an ability for probation and parole officers to have an offender under supervision. This bill would provide a swift and certain sanction for the probation or parole officer to impose upon the offender by placing them in the local county jail the first time for a period of 48 hours, pretty immediately. And it can happen with subsequent violations as well, up to, I believe, 360 hours maximum in 1 year. And these are to provide that swift, certain sanction to deter the offender from reviolating, and also to provide an intermediate sanction so that we are having the less expensive, more immediate, swift, certain sanction rather than the delayed, exponentially more expensive sanction of putting them in the Department of Corrections for a full sentence. Also to provide some incentive and requirements for our offenders, our probationers, our parolees to take some accountability for their actions, to be accountable for their behavior, to do better and stay better. We have created in this bill the concept of earned compliance credits. This would provide that for nonviolent offenders, and in the bill we specify what types of offenses would allow offenders to be eligible, original charged offenses, who have probation violations that are not new violations of the law. They are not weapons violations. They are not violations of a stay-away order, so that they're not dealing with a victim. But they're just technical violations, like a hot year analysis or something like that. Those folks, let me back up. The folks who are in this universe of offender for the nonviolent crimes, if they have no probation or parole violations at all, I'm sorry, for a period of 30 days at a time, can earn, for every 30-day period of compliance with no violation reports, they can earn 30 days off their supervision at the end of their sentence, not to go below a total of 2 years of supervision. What we saw in the data was that if you can get someone through that 2-year window of supervision without a violation, they're remarkably less likely to ever violate the law again. So we wanted to keep that 2-year window on the books, but provide some accountability incentives for offenders to take responsibility, behave better, not violate, and not have taxpayers on the hook for expenses beyond the 2 years. If someone does violate their probation or parole, those credits would go away. Those mechanisms are in this bill. As for the administrative jail sanctions, which I spoke of a moment ago, we do deal with a different sort of funding mechanism for those than we have for folks who are in a county jail for other reasons. If someone is placed in the county jail for the administrative jail sanction for that 48-hour period or a subsequent one, this bill says that there would be a minimum $30 per day reimbursement to that county government entity for the expense of housing that prisoner. Now, to build in a safeguard so that we are not creating budget problems here and that we are indeed having a savings, and the plan here is to have savings through the deterrent effects that we can then reinvest some of these savings into more effective practices. So the hope is that by not putting these people in DOC for the duration of their full sentence, we have savings. Out of those savings, we can put $30 a day for these shorter dips in the county jail that should have more deterrent effects. We want to make sure that we're not creating a budget problem, so we have a couple of safeguards in the bill. Before any one offender, and before each and every offender, can be placed in the county jail for one of these administrative jail sanction periods, the probation parole officer must determine and certify to that local entity that the funding exists for that particular offender for their time to be paid for, so there should be no one placed in who's not spending or incurring expenses that cannot be reimbursed. And this is all annually subject to the appropriations process. What we believe is that DOC, because of limited funding at the beginning before more of the savings are realized, we believe DOC will try this in a single or few county pilot project, see that the deterrent effect is real, that the savings are real, and then hopefully that can grow over subsequent years as more savings with other provisions of the bill are realized. We also have a universe of offenders who are, again, nonviolent offenders, and if they do violate their probation, nonviolent offenders who have nonviolent probation offense violations, violations that are not violations of new law, that are not weapons violations, that are not stay-away order violations, so there's no victim involved. For these folks, rather than having the entire likely multi-year sentence imposed, there would be first a 120-day confinement to the Department of Corrections before the full sentence would be imposed, hopefully to get their attention, get them in a program if they need it, realize the deterrent effect, but not incur the full expense that we are currently incurring with a lot of these folks for keeping them for years at a time. We also have some accountability measures built in. There is a sunsetted oversight body created, mostly folks who are already in government, just to measure the recidivism reductions, measure the savings, and make sure that the goals anticipated are realized. Because if this doesn't work, we need to undo it. We need to go in another direction and continue trying to achieve safer communities for the least expense possible. What this bill does not do in any situation for any person for any crime is change the possible sentence that is available in the courtroom when this person goes to trial. Whatever a person could be sentenced for today for any crime on the books, they can be sentenced for after this bill passes for any crime on the books. And we are not dealing here, even as we look at changes to the probation and parole treatment of these offenders, we are not looking at the treatment of violent offenders. We're looking at nonviolent offenders. Again, I want to thank everyone who was involved in this working group that really dug in a data-driven, evidence-based way. We didn't go into this working group with any preconceived ideas of what our solutions would be. I didn't expect to be coming forward with any of these three proposals. But the data was very compelling that these were solutions that are very likely to work. And my hope is that we try it and we see success. With that, I'm willing to take any questions, and I renew my motion.
The Senator from Lawrence has moved the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 699 be adopted. Senator from the 23rd, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
It is short, and I ask that it be read.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Dempsey to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 699, page 10, section 217.718, line 4, by inserting after the word, quote, reimbursement, close quote, the following, quote, comma, if the reimbursement is less than the actual cost to the county jail or other institution, close quote.
Senator from the 23rd moves to adopt the Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator, would you like to explain your amendment? I'm sorry.
I would move for the adoption of the amendment, Mr. President. basically, I don't think, we don't like it when we push the cost, when the federal government pushes its cost down to us. I think we need to treat our counties with the same respect or that we would wish. And so that's the reason for the amendment. You know, they are burdened just as we are. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator from the 23rd has moved to the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Lawrence, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I guess to speak on the amendment.
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've had conversations about this amendment, and it was presented before, and we've attempted to look at a way to address this local concern to St. Charles County. The rate of reimbursement to all the counties across the state has been something that we've heard a lot about over the last few years. I understand this amendment would say that if that doesn't actually meet the costs, then there would be more than $30 reimbursed. I guess my concern for the taxpayers of the state is if we are seeing inefficient operation of jails in various counties of the state, we shouldn't penalize the state taxpayers for that. We are seeing that across most of the state, $30 more than meets the cost of housing an inmate, certainly in the Department of Corrections in most cases. The numbers I'm given is that the marginal cost, I think, is $17 a day. I think that the state policy needs to be to encourage efficient construction and operation of all of the local facilities, and for that reason, and for the fact that it's going to greatly reduce the savings that this bill can achieve, I would oppose the amendment.
Senator from Cape, are you seeking recognition? Senator from Cape, what purpose?
To inquire the senator from Lawrence.
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do.
He yields. Senator, proceed.
Thank you, Senator, and thanks for bringing the bill forward. And as you know, this is one of the areas, not from the perspective of the senator from St. Charles, but from a completely different perspective than the senator from St. Charles, on whether or not the issue of whether or not the state is actually saving money by sending these short dips into a county jail instead of a full-blown revocation during the probationary period incident to a parole. As I understand it, what you've done in this bill is you've come up with $30 a day.
And that is only for those that are in there on the administrative leave confinement, not for the rest of the universe of offenders, right, who are in the county jail.
And it's done as a flat rate, much like we do the appropriations process now in House Bill 8, which is we basically appropriate $18 a day. $19.58 is what you're looking at now. Okay. So, as I understand it, if we adopt the senator from 23rd's amendment into your bill, we are not saving money. We are costing ourselves money.
Well, I mean, to be fair, his amendment is for one county, but it reduces the savings. If we did that across the state, it would greatly reduce the savings. And I think that to do it for one county, and I understand trying to take care of your district, and I don't fault him for offering this amendment at all, but I think that if we're going to start carving out and having different rates for different counties, that's sort of an incentive to have inefficiently run.
We don't do that in House Bill 8. We pay our counties one flat rate that's
right
out there. We don't say within the appropriations process you get a dollar value modifier if you live in an urban area.
Right.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
And I understand where you're going, but I can tell you if we start doing this, there's no reason to do this section of your bill. And
that's why I spoke in opposition.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would hope that at some point, if that happens and this does go on, that we're able to then park this, you can drop a new substitute and we can do what I think is something that we need to do, which is the first part of your bill, which is we get out of this unique Missouri situation where the period following parole, the probationary period following a parolee is 5 years.
It's abnormally long in the nation.
That's insane. And the prosecutors will not, you know, and for the benefit of where everyone's at. If you look at the senator from Lawrence's bill, you take the first page, the second page, the third page, and halfway through the fourth page, he's dealing with a program to try to get around the fact that Missouri is on the extremely high of having a five-year period after a parolee. Most states are in a two-year period. Most organizations will tell you that most individuals that reoccur do it within that two-year period. They actually do it within an 18-month period. But I understand why you had to write in four pages that which we should be able to do in a half a sentence to say no probationary period following parole can be greater than 2 years. Period. End of discussion. But because of the prosecutors, and I'm sure they would agree to that if we gave them a court cost. I'm sure they would agree to that if we gave them a check kiting or cashing fund. If we would just give the prosecutors, and I don't mean make light of this, an individual prosecutor, great human being. An association with them, horrible. They're just horrible. And I've seen it all the way back from Senate Bill 5 and how all of them argued, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible. Caskey puts a $4 court fee for their retirement, and it's excellent. We got to pass this thing.
That was a no vote on that one.
Yeah, you were wise to vote no. But really, the main dollar savings that are here, as I see it, are following this plan in this belief that if we can lower this five-year probation period following the incidence of parole, the way that you're doing it, it would be a good thing. I understand why you're doing it the way you're doing it and appreciate that. But the second aspect, which is where we can dip these people into a short-term probation violation period, when we're paying $19.58 a day, and I don't even know, I'll ask the senator from St. Charles what it costs or what they think it costs per day for a prisoner up there, but we're sort of defeating the purpose. And I hope you agree with that, because I don't want to get into a position of, I think, even though I don't like it, I can live with a lot of this stuff because it is subject to appropriations. It's a new program that if it's not working, it's subject to appropriation. But if we start putting in there, hey, this is the way it's going to be, and I don't know if the senator from St. Charles can live with it not being in there. So maybe all we can do is get part one of your proposed bill, which I think the lion's share of the savings are going to be attributed to that anyway. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I'll keep working for the whole thing, but I want to address two things that you said. I think if we do have those high rates, and in some counties, if their claim is that this is actually this much more expensive per offender to house each inmate, I think they're doing something wrong, and we should, rather than rewarding that behavior, incent them to do it more efficiently.
Well, right now we're paying them $19.58 in House Bill 8, according to the senator from the first. I thought it was $18, but it's $19.58. Under your bill, we're going to pay them $30. Okay?
Right.
And I understand it's subject to appropriations. I have concerns with that. But what happens if St. Charles in this amendment goes on and St. Charles presents a bill to the state that says it's $285? Well, plus you get a mint on your pillow.
There's another safeguard ahead of that, and I think, like you, that we just should not do that. But the other safeguard is for each inmate before they are taken, there has to be certification that those funds exist for that individual before they are taken to the jail and put in. But I do completely agree with you. We cannot start having these carve-outs and even higher costs. And to back up to the two-year probation conversation, I do think it's important, and something that this bill does beyond just pare it back to 2 years, is we create a mechanism that makes the offender become accountable for that reduction in time to improve their behavior and not have more offenses, because the data didn't show that just having someone on probation for 2 years made them less likely to offend. What it showed was that 2 years without any violations made them less likely to offend. So I do like that this bill includes within it the incentive for that offender to become accountable for not reoffending during that two-year period. But a lot of your points are well taken.
And I hear you, but some of the things, and I know that everything is a balancing act to try to get where the bill is, so I'm not going to try to offer amendments. But, you know, as I read this bill, and I just wanted to be a mean prosecutor, I could file a motion, toll time served, never really notice that motion up, and then that individual is not getting any credit to get the reduction because it doesn't go, you know, retroactive. It just says whenever, you know, if you look on page 5.
Well, it's pending. It's yeah. Accruing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a void motion, if it's a motion without merit, why should that individual's time served be told? Particularly when there's no time frame on when the judiciary must make an ultimate decision. I mean, they could sit here and just play a game of, hey, we're not going to toll you because we don't like you. I filed the motion, and then, you know, the judge never rules on it. He never gets any of his credit, so he's on a 5-year probationary period. But if you look on, and that was just, I understand if you had to draft it that way, but in my glance of it, on page 5 and page 6, so the bottom of page 5, the motion may be made any time prior to the first month in which the person may earn compliance credits under this section. The offender's ability to earn credit shall be suspended until the court or board makes its finding. No time period on when the finding must be made. If the court or board finds that the offender is ineligible for earned compliance credits, the credit shall begin to accrue on the first day of the next calendar month following the issuance of the decision. So why doesn't the individual get credit for a motion without merit during the time in which that motion is pending? I don't know if you had to write it that way, if the prosecutors wrote it that way or the judiciary wrote it that way, but that's why I'm saying I understand why you had to do all of that, but the cleaner and simpler way would be to say no probationary period secondary to parole shall be greater than 2 years. And then we don't have to worry about all of this stuff. But I understand why you can't do that. I understand. But I also then say while we're doing that, because of all of these groups out here and their special interests and their tough on crime that they don't want to pay for, you know, it gets a little tough to balance all that. So I'm willing to live with that. But again, to dovetail it back into the senator from the 23rd Amendment, what is the actual cost? And I guess I have to ask him, what is the actual cost?
I don't know.
According to St. Charles, to house a prisoner, and I don't know what that is. I don't know that there is a core way in which we use to calculate that.
So you get a wide variance,
right.
on those.
Well,
numbers.
I just know in the appropriations process, we say you get $19.58 a day. Period. We don't do a dollar value modifier. We don't look at your jail and say, oh my gosh, you have Anderson insulated windows, so we're going to cut off. And oh my gosh, you have Pella cheap vinyl windows, you don't get anything. You know, we don't do any of those calculations to go on down. So
uniform. And I know the counties have said for a long time the $19 doesn't cover whatever the actual expense is. And then,
okay.
Then you get the DOC numbers, which, you know, that debate's ongoing. You're familiar with it. But
right.
I don't think we can get to the county-by-county analysis here.
And, I'm being told that different counties get different amounts. So what counties get different amounts? Well, maybe it's easier if I just do this. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Kate.
Can I inquire the senator from the first?
Senator from the first. You yield to the senator from Kate.
I yield.
You yield, Senator.
I heard our inquiry. Can you enlighten us?
Senator, we just heard the budget from corrections in appropriations today. And we actually were going over this exact issue, and that's where that number was fresh on my mind. That 1958 is what we have in this current budget, and the numbers that were provided by corrections that are offered up as far as what their cost in their county range anywhere from $17 to $40.
But we only pay them $19.58.
We only pay them
$19.58. Yeah, okay. I thought when you handed me this note that some counties got $40 only got $17.
This is the information that we receive from counties as far as what their cost is.
Okay. But I am correct in my dialogue with the senator from Lawrence to say that regardless of what it may or may not cost the county right now, we pay $19.58 per prisoner under the senator from Lawrence's bill. If the senator from the 23rd Amendment doesn't go on, we're raising that for $30 a day. So, you know, pretty substantial increase there. And then we're saying that you'll get that for this short period, and we're paying a premium over what we normally pay you as a county because we think that there are benefits, secondary and ancillary, to this DIP violation payment as opposed to a full-blown revocation or anything else. As I understand it, and I can inquire back to the senator from Lawrence, but as I read the bill and my understanding of the justification of that is, right now, if somebody violates the terms and conditions of their probation, the only options available to probation and parole, as well as basically the justice system as a whole that's here, is you can either say bad boy, bad girl, or you can do a full-blown revocation, meaning that then they have to serve out. So if I got paroled and I had two more years on my sentence, but I got paroled and then I carried probation, I could get out early, but if I violated, I would go back and have to serve all of my remaining time period. Well, Senator, and what I think the senator from Lawrence is doing and what this committee is doing is it's saying, okay, we don't want to do that because we don't want to incarcerate somebody for 2 years, but if somebody tested positive for drug use in violation of their probation, we can send them to jail for 48 hours, shock them back in, and say, listen, this is what's waiting for you. Don't test positive again. Move them out. We avoid the whole revocation process of sending them back for 2 years. And as a split, I guess, of that savings, we're not going to pay you $19.58, which is the normal rate in House Bill 5, which I agree is woefully underfunded, but it is what it is. So is K-12 education. So is higher education. Right. The only people in this entire state that are not woefully underfunded are tax credit takers. They're the only ones in the entire state that are not woefully underfunded. And even they think they're woefully underfunded. So, you know, it then follows that we say we're not going to pay you $19.58. We're going to pay you $30 a day, which the last time I checked, $30 is more than $19.58. That's my understanding. And that's how we're going to split with these counties, sort of fill in this role to do these DIP violations back into the correctional center.
Well, I think that what we'd have to confirm, Senator, is that there would be a net, mm-hmm. a net savings through these changes. I mean, I thought was the purpose of this bill. I mean, correction costs are continuing to go through the roof.
I totally agree, and that's why this whole program is subject to the appropriations process, okay? And I think that we can, by the amount of money that we put in to this program, we can first start it as a pilot program to get some real data to see if sending somebody in for 48 hours at the beginning versus bad boy, bad boy, bad boy, sorry, I got no other option, I'm revoking you, and you go back and serve the remaining 3 years of your sentence, if that results in a net reduction to the state as opposed to what we do now, which is bad boy, bad boy, bad boy, sorry, you've tested me, full-blown revocation.
Okay. Well,
I think, to the senator's credit, as I've raised concerns, and I know you too, as long as it's subject to the appropriations process, we can track it. We can start a lot of new programs that way. I've even said that with tax credit programs. Hey, if you can go get 18 and 82 votes to fund historic preservation over sheltered workshops for Down syndrome adults, then shame on us as a body, but you won, and go knock yourselves out in the appropriations process. Why many people don't like the appropriations process, particularly those that receive tax credits, is I think they know what we all know. If the historic preservation and the low-income people had to come here and compete for dollars in the appropriations process against sexually abused children in child assessment centers, domestic violence shelters, Down syndrome to children in state schools or K through 12 education or higher education, they'd lose 9 times out of 10, probably even 10 times out of 10. But by avoiding that appropriations process, they've been able to set up a system where Missouri is number one in the country in historic preservation, number two in the country in low-income housing, 35th in the country in K through 12 education funding, and 45th in the country, quickly on track to knock the heck out of Mississippi at the bottom of the state in higher education per capita funding.
Right.
Hey, but we can rehab an old building.
One final thought in relation to, again, trying to find net savings in what we're doing you know, with this bill,
right,
from the senator from Lawrence. It was interesting in testimony today when we looked at the line item that funds electronic monitoring of you know, where they've got the
anklet,
okay, yeah. That the majority of that funding goes for offenders that have violated you know, condition of their parole.
So it's, yeah, so instead of housing them, they do basically house arrest.
So it's $1.9 million that is, you know, after they've served a portion of their sentence, okay, they're on parole, you know, on probation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they put this system on them. I thought that was interesting in that how are we utilizing that to the extent possible to keep people from going, nonviolent offenders from going to prison and having them,
yeah,
use that system prior to going into the system.
And I'm sorry, I didn't ask you or have this inquiry before you had the Department of Corrections and Appropriations today. I saw this in federal court, and I'm assuming it'll flow down to state court, but I think the federal government lost a lawsuit where now prisoners have a constitutional right to MP3 players. So we're probably going to have to open up an iTunes account at some point for every prisoner that's incarcerated now.
You know, one of the
I saw that the other day, so...
It's one other thought, if anybody...
Anything to keep them out of prison? You know, I you have a full-blown research library in every prison,
sure,
because of all that. So any ability to keep individuals out of prison, and that's why I say, working with the senator from the 10th, the only way to really keep them out is to have an honest dialogue with us that are policymakers to what is and what not is a crime. Because once we put it on the books... We can't really, I mean, the prosecutors have to prosecute what we say is the law.
Right.
So this is on us. This is on us in the General Assembly. And long dialogues with the senator from the 8th, we never got it done. The senator from Lawrence has picked up the call. I understand what he's doing here. I support the general concept of what he's doing. But until we want to have an honest dialogue about what is and is not a crime in the state of Missouri, It's going to be real tough. It's going to be real tough. So, thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you,
Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Cape.
Can I inquire the senator from the 23rd?
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
Do.
He yields. Senator, proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. I know you've had conversations with the senator from Lawrence back and forth. I don't know where those are. But I understand we're on your amendment, and I just, how much does it cost? Is it St. Charles County or is it a...
It's St. Charles County.
Okay. Yeah. How much does it cost St. Charles County?
Here's how it was explained to me.
Okay.
That they receive $66 from the federal government for to reimburse them, and that's not sufficient. And the director has said that,
you know, the
cost goes up to $84.
Okay. The federal government pays $2,000 for a toilet seat, too. And $500 for a hammer. So using what the federal government pays for stuff is not always that great.
No, I'm just saying, I also kind of answered right. as the second part of that, that they're telling me it costs up to $84
a day. $84 a day.
And now, with this amendment, you got to remember, they're accepting one class of prisoners, and they're getting paid $19 and, was it, 58 cents?
From the state
a day. Yeah. What we're asking to do with this is, okay, you're operating at a deficit right now with those prisoners that you're taking, okay? So we want to help you by letting you take more prisoners at less of a deficit.
Now, what I would say is I want to see their math, because I promise you, just like every 911 center in here, they're cross-utilizing employees.
You're saying
attributing fixed overhead costs.
Well, I would say
prisoners.
One thing that they said, that you know, the health care of the employees, or the, excuse me, employee, the, that they provide health care for the prisoners. I guess that's cost. I don't have a breakdown on it for
right.
you.
Right.
And that's what, with this amendment, we're not telling them. The state is not obligated to pay that amount. We're just saying if you're operating at a deficit and you're not going to get paid for it, you don't have to take those prisoners.
Okay.
And so there's not an increased cost to the state. They're not going to take them if they're not going to get paid their cost for that prisoner.
I understand, but that, like I told the senator from Lawrence, if your amendment goes on, there's no need to do that second half of that bill. And unless you just want to exempt St. Charles out from that. I mean, at the end of the day, I think there is a lot of debate on you know, what you want to exempt out and what you don't want
to exempt.
Well,
I mean, we have.
From.
Our county is contributing to the Most Smart Board so that sheriffs around the state can make more.
Totally with you on that. And if you want to file a bill to eliminate that, those guys haven't even made one.
We're so flush with cash, we're donating to those support guys, everybody else's sheriffs.
No, I'm with you. Those guys haven't made one distribution yet. As I understand it, and we can call the senator from, I can't remember where he's from, Polk in here and find out, you know, as a retired sheriff where they are. You know, not the biggest fan of that bill, but I let it go forward. You even let it go forward on where that is. But they're not
right.
even making distributions out of that. So if we want to end that,
county,
I'm with you. We
and
can
my
end
county
that.
Was one that challenged the law, and that they were not successful, have not been successful.
Yeah. I mean, believe me, I read a funny email from the senator from St. Francis talking about how he was part of the 99% of golfers in this country, and how he thinks it's unfair that as a 99%er that the 1%ers have the ability to make all the birdies, make all the eagles.
Is that like an Occupy?
Yeah, it's a total Occupy. So I understand where you're at, that there are people that spend more money than they pay in taxes, or receive more money from the government than they pay in taxes, and it can be carried off into any analogy that's there. But anyway, I understand where your amendment is. I don't know if you and the senator from Lawrence talked. Is he offering a substitute on this?
No, he's opposed to the amendment. I was talking to him about an amendment that I have that relates to another part of the bill.
Okay.
And that's what our side conversation was about.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Kate.
Can I inquire the senator from Lawrence?
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
So what do you think? Well, first of all, I've had a chance to look at the amendment, which when we were speaking before, I'd heard it read. I hadn't read it physically. And I thought before that it was an exemption just for St. Charles County, but it actually appears to have statewide application for any county where they're claiming the cost is more, which, you're right, imperils that entire provision of the bill, which to my mind is a very important part of the bill that has some of the most important deterrent effects that we're looking at. I'd ask the body to defeat the bill, and I would also remind the body that if, for whatever reason, St. Charles or another county cannot afford to get by housing these people on these administrative sanctions periods, they still don't have to take these offenders. So we're not forcing them to take the deficit. Or, and I think that their courts and their prosecutors and their sheriffs will see that this is a successful thing if they will participate in it.
Or the other thing that we could do is make sure that no executive makes more than a teacher from one of those counties, or an administrator, or anyone else. If we want to basically have the savings, I mean, believe me, Senator, I appreciate counties. I live in one. They're fine. But, you know, I think we've got 17 people right now running for public administrator of Cape Girardeau County. 17 people. You want to know why? I don't believe that we have 17 people that find in their hearts a calling to help the disabled, those that need a public administrator to be a conservative over their estates. They're running because they make $72,000 a year as the public administrator of Cape County. Okay?
Good income.
$72,000 a year. And then I don't know if the public administrator somehow falls into the calculation of what it costs to house a prisoner. I don't know how the counties come up with all of these numbers and everything else. What I do know is the counties never say no to a federal prisoner, even though they lose money on it. And they're not saying no, you know, to building new jails to house these people. Every one of these counties that complains is before the voters wanting to pass a tax increase or a bond issue to go build a new jail to house all of these individuals. Okay? So you want to close your jail? I would just say, okay, those counties, close your jail if you're losing money. Because I have never once seen one of these individuals turn down these federal prisoners. In fact, they're recruiting for them to lose money. To lose money. It just kind of defies logic. So, I don't know. I guess we can have a vote on where this ends up going. But I would say if his amendment goes on, I think you would need to rethink, and maybe we can just do the first part of your bill and at least move forward the first part of your bill, because I don't know that the second part of your bill or this part of your bill is worth pursuing if this amendment goes on.
I would tell our colleagues in the chamber that if this amendment goes on, that the success of the entire bill becomes a lot less likely.
Okay. Well, I think the first part is still good, but the second part is. All right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Can I inquire of the Senator from Lawrence?
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do yield.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, since the opening of your bill, since you did your explanation, there's been an amendment offered, and I want to apologize. I know I want to get to this amendment, but I also had some basic questions on your underlying bill.
Okay.
If you want to do that now.
Whenever you want.
Okay. Okay. Let's deal with this amendment maybe first, and right, then I'll see how this progresses, and then I'll get up later maybe and ask you about this whole compliance credit and what we're doing with certain felonies and if misdemeanors are involved in any way and that kind of thing, okay?
I can tell you it's felonies, but we can talk about it whenever.
Yeah. Let's go back on the amendment. Do you have a copy of the amendment? It was not distributed. It was read.
I have seen one, but I do not have one.
Okay. He is on page 10. And I asked you when there was some discussion by the Senator from Cape and Senator from 23rd, I kind of showed you the amendment, and I heard kind of in the discussion that there was all this discussion about St. Charles County, but the amendment goes on page 10, line 4, and after the word reimbursement, says if the reimbursement is less than actual cost to the county jail or other institution. Now, that section that begins on page 9 of and then continues on 10, that's not St. Charles County, that's everybody.
Right.
Now, is your sense that where this provision, while it might affect St. Charles County, would it not also affect probably every urban county, every major county, where intuitively I would believe that their cost is probably higher?
Well, now that I've been handed it, it looks like in any county, that makes the case that the actual cost is above the $30, they would not have to take the offender.
And would your kind of intuitive belief from what you and the senator from the 10th did on this bill, my guess would be that would probably be not just St. Charles County, but probably St. Louis County, the city of St. Louis, the county of Jackson, the county of Greene.
I would anticipate that a number of counties would at least come forward attempting to make that case.
I mean, it's more what I'm getting at is I would expect that an urban or suburban county is more likely to have a higher cost than a smaller county. I don't know if that's correct.
Well, you probably have more rural counties that have maybe older facilities, so probably.
Okay. All right. So we have this amendment. We don't know what it does to this whole provision of the bill because we don't know that this doesn't obliterate the savings of your underlying bill.
Well, now that I read it, it may not. It may just have such limited utility geographically that it really hampers the efficacy of the bill.
I'm sorry, say that again. I'm sorry.
If you have enough counties coming in under this statewide and closing their doors, it makes the experiment just really not even occur. If enough counties are trying to get themselves exempted out of it.
Okay. But your sense from the amendment is there's more involved here than just one county.
Absolutely.
Okay. And since it's unknown, we don't know the total financial impact of the amendment on this provision of your bill.
Right. Okay. But what I can tell you is because it's subject to appropriations, and because there has to be a certification before each offender is committed that the funds are there for that individual, that universe is going to be very limited, especially over the first year or two. DOC is going to be piloting this limited universe in a small portion of the state. And we can continue the evaluation and the conversation about, I guess, in the future after this bill passes, if that rate needs to be adjusted. But I just don't know that this bill affects enough people if this amendment goes on.
Okay. Did this come out of judiciary, I hope?
It did.
This bill. All right. Were there witnesses, I assume, given the kind of the extent, the amount of time that you and the Center from 10th spent on this, I assume there were most of the prosecutors, a lot of people were for this.
Well, and I would also like to point out at this point, I know that he had to go home because of tornado damage in his district, like some of us had last night, but the senator from Polk,
right,
a retired sheriff, was very, very vocally involved, thank you, in the negotiation on this provision. And he was adamant that $30 figure be the number that is included in this bill.
Were there any witnesses against this bill?
Got a list of witnesses for,
I mean, did any specific county or anybody testify against it? Were they,
well, we had,
did they bring
we
up
did
this
have
provision?
Actually, a lobbyist for St. Charles County did testify in the Senate Judiciary Committee on this issue.
And it was specifically on the issue that the senator from 23rd is addressing?
Yes, and there may have been a couple of other issues that we've sort of worked through, but I know this issue was raised.
Okay.
So it's been an ongoing. Yeah, and the only county that came forward at the hearing in either chamber voicing opposition was St. Charles County. But this has been a huge work product with ongoing negotiation for 6 to 8 months of meetings to get it to something that was workable. And again, the senator from Polk spent a lot of his career dealing with this particular issue.
Right.
He was adamant that 30 be the number.
And it's your belief that this amendment goes on that it essentially, in financial term, nullifies a lot of the savings potentially to where the whole second part of your bill is unnecessary. Is that kind of what I gathered from your discussion with the senator from CAPE?
Well, as I'm reading the amendment, it doesn't require that more money be spent. It just says those doors may be closed. So there might not be places, enough places in the state where the counties are doing it. It just doesn't work.
Right. Okay. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
We're on the motion of the senator from the 23rd. Is any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the senator from Lawrence.
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do yield.
You yield, Senator. You may proceed.
Sometimes you better off being absent from the chamber because you know least about the issue, and I made the mistake of sitting on the floor, and now I'm kind of trying to grasp the issue. This issue deals with cost, and it deals with counties. Quickly give me the issue.
All right. Currently, the counties are being reimbursed at $19 and some change for housing inmates. Right.
They can get up to $35.
Under this bill, we create administrative jail sanctions for a limited universe of probation parole offenders who violated their probation and parole to be placed in the county jail for a period of 48 hours as a swift, certain, immediate punishment for violations of probation and parole. A cheaper alternative than having them go serve their entire multi-year sentence in the Department of Corrections.
We're there.
This bill says the minimum rate for that shall be $30 a day reimbursement for that universe. However, it also says it's subject to appropriation, and even a further safeguard beyond that is the probation parole person must certify to the local authority before that person is presented for confinement that the funds exist for that individual person to be housed at that rate.
Okay.
The senator from the 23rd has offered an amendment to allow any county to refuse to take those people who claim that does not meet their cost of confining those people.
Okay. The savings to the state that you're assuming on this bill by doing that?
Let me get that sheet of paper.
One. I'm not going to hold you to it.
It's here in this binder. I'll get it for you.
Well, the basic premise is the counties.
It's sizable savings.
I sympathize with the counties, but the counties are never going to be satisfied because we're never going to be able to afford the reimbursements of up to $35 a day for prisoners when we're cutting education, higher education. So, I mean, the safeguard's still there that the Missouri General Assembly will dictate and determine the portion of GR which will go to reimburse the county governments, even though the senator from Polk wants it at 30, that's just the maximum, correct? You still have to go to the appropriations process of the General Assembly, and it can still stay at 19.
For these particular incarcerations, the folks that are on these administrative jail sanctions, it's subject to appropriations for the amount available for it, period, for $30. Will be the minimum amount.
You're requiring a minimum amount.
That was part of the negotiation to have this, because the counties did not, right now the counties aren't having to house these people, that they get shipped to the pen.
Right.
So for them to take this new universe of offenders,
they're going to say, hey, what the issue is I believe it's up to $35 an hour.
Yes.
The state can reimburse the counties for holding the prisoners for that 1 year of sentencing. If they're sentenced to less than a year, they stay in county jail.
And for all those other folks that they're housing, we're not affecting the rate with this bill.
Realistically, when there is a tight budget, there is something to cut. Elected officials are going to say, I don't care if you're requiring us to pay a minimum. We can't afford it. You counties take the burden of it. We're going to go ahead and fund education, and we're going to go ahead and fund. Well, I'm giving you the realistic.
Well, then under this bill, those people cannot be placed in the jail because there has to be a certification for each individual placed in that county jail. The probation and parole officer has to verify that there is the funds available for this individual to be put there, and they have to certify it before. So that can't be passed. That buck can't be passed.
That's how you're stopping the buck from being passed. You're requiring.
For this universe of folks, yes.
Well, as we all know, it always comes down to a matter what we do, the counties, and I understand their dilemma. The first bill I ever handled in 1989 was reimbursement rates up to $35, but it was a fallacy now that I have sat here for a long enough period of time that we're going to pass all the laws, but we're going to make sure education's funded and higher education's funded, so corrections and mental health are always going to take the brunt of it, and that's just how the process works, so I understand your issue.
Do you want some numbers, or do you want to...
Well, how much is the savings?
Well, there are three provisions of the bill. This is actually the way it breaks out, the administrative jail sanctions, coupling the two together. In FY13, it shows pilot, and we don't have the solid number of what we would save by not having the confinement in the DOC, but there would be a cost for these folks of $240,000 in the first year. But then we have savings under the cap on revocation time of between $274,000 and $328,000, and a cap on the earned discharge savings doesn't kick in until next year. And then those savings net and across those categories ramp up dramatically to FY17 when we get closer to the point of closing a unit within a penitentiary. But in FY13, the savings range a net from $34,000 to $88,000 the first year, and we're looking later at just a range of just under $4 million to about $12.5 million. But this bill is a first step that I hope shows us things work.
Right.
We can do more later.
So that's why you're putting the guarantee to the counties in it, because the counties are saying, we don't, and I understand the county's dilemma.
We're not going to play. I sympathize with it.
We're not going to play in this game unless there's some guarantees for us, because in the long haul, the state's going to save the money, but we are the ones that are going to be responsible for the cost to get to that point to save the money.
I mean, I think it would be great if we could...
Gotcha. I have where you're going. You have explained it well, and that's why you're requiring the minimum at 30.
Right. And asking for a no on the amendment.
Who came up with the idea that $30 is what it costs a day for a county?
There was a lot of conversation within these working groups that went on all through the interim. Numbers presented on various ends of the spectrum, and really... someone who was very vocal and took a real lead that was on the working group was the senator from Polk, former sheriff.
Right, and that's a good person to have.
And he was adamant that 30 be the number.
The bottom line throughout this entire process, and I'm going to support you, when you get my age, you only have so many brain cells that can focus on one thought. So Senator from Cape gave me some facts I grasped, but now I lost my train of thought with you. I understand where you're going. There is a cost, but there is a savings in the future. Where do we go from here is where we're getting to at the point. Sooner or later, the point has come to, and I don't know if we'll ever get there, we have to stop creating more and more crimes to put more and more people away. Then we have to also stop to the point that we get responsible prosecutors that are more worried about not just their political career, public safety, but they weigh the public safety over their political career on how we're going to go. And then we have to deal with the sentencing guidelines, which I think you're dealing with. But as politicians, it's a very difficult line to walk, because you have to weigh what the taxpayer can afford to what is public safety. And it's a very fine line. But I'm glad you're taking the initiative. You have the courage to take the initiative, and that's why I'm going to follow your lead on this. But I grasped the issue because I ended up sitting here long enough to educate myself on the issue. Thank you.
We're on the motion of the senator from the 23rd. Is any other senators wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from the 23rd has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The noes appear to have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. We're back on the motion of the senator from the Lawrence, senator from 23rd. What purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
We send your amendment forward.
It has been distributed. I would request a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move for the adoption of the amendment. My understanding, there are cases where a parole officer, a probation officer is not informing the judge when violations are occurring, and this would compel that probation or parole officer to notify the sentencing court when an offender has violated a term of probation or parole, but when a violation report was not submitted.
Senator from 23rd moves to adopt the Senate Amendment number 2. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Cape, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Can I inquire the Senator from Lawrence?
Senator from Lawrence, you yield.
I yield.
You yield, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. And I think it's important because it'll help from a context standpoint. It's my understanding that previously used to be a prosecutor.
I was an assistant for several years.
Assistant prosecutor. So you're familiar, and I understand the directions that you're coming from. And I understand on this amendment where the senator from 23rd is coming from, and he was gracious enough to share some information with me that I understand his point of view. And I think it's worth a couple of minutes in the Senate to talk about a direction that we're looking at going. When a judge and a prosecutor in a particular county or a prosecutor prosecutes to the full extent of the law that we have written and we have put on the books, and then a judge finds that individual guilty, or a jury finds that individual guilty, and the judge then sentences that individual to the full extent of the law, that judge is doing their job. And I'm not harping on a judge, but what we have seen in the state, and as somebody that's been up here for 12 years, is that when you have that dynamic, that a judge and a prosecutor that don't have to worry about the costs associated with incarcerating those individuals or violating or revoking those individuals all of the time, I hear the senator from St. Charles, and I understand his constituents, and they're my constituents as well, but I've talked to my own judges and my own prosecutors. If Cape County had to pay the state for every one of its residents that the prosecutor and the judge send to a state prison, it would be a totally different dynamic of how many people they continue to sin. So when the state steps in and tells these local judges and prosecutors that upsets them to no end, that we're taking away control, that we're telling them what they can and can't do in their jobs, I understand. But the fact of the matter is, we can't afford not to have some kind of oversight associated with that. And there's many ways to do that. You're looking at one way in this bill. I believe the real way to go is to just bite the bullet, like the senator from the 8th said, and let's dive in and let's have an honest conversation of what we want to spend $16,000 a year on. Is that what it costs to incarcerate a prison? $20,000 a year on. Okay? And we need to have an honest conversation in this chamber with one another as senators, going back and looking at our district and saying, hey, do I really want to spend $20,000 a year on someone that got caught with a dime bag of pot? Do I really think that that's the best utilization of tax dollars? Because we know we're going to fund all of that, and we know we're going to do all of that, because we're not going to cut prisons and release people once they got sentenced. But the consequences of all of that are, I was looking the other day, I asked Senate Appropriations, name me the top 5 dependent GR programs that have taken the cuts in the budget. Okay? And where are we at? Topping the list is Career Ladder. Career Ladder used to pay teachers for work above and beyond out of the classroom. We have reduced that by $37 million. Next highest GR-dependent program that we've cut, MoreNet. MoreNet's how us in outstate Missouri actually get internet. We've cut that by $11 million. Then the next highest was the state deferred comp match. We cut that by $8.1 million. That was a supplemental retirement account to continue to get our employees to save. And it goes on and on and on. And I understand what you're doing. It's not exactly the way that I would do it, but I don't know that I could get any more votes than you're struggling to get to. But I know that we have to have this conversation. We have to have this dialogue. I appreciate what the senator from the 23rd is doing in responding to his local constituents. I understand all of that. All I would say to the body is we have passed so many laws that it now costs $20,000 a year to house somebody in a state prison. The judges and the prosecutors don't have to worry about how to balance the budget because they're sending more and more people for longer and longer prison terms to our state prison population. And you're trying to address it in one way, and that gets the judges and the prosecutors upset. But my answer to them and my answer to this amendment from the senator from the 23rd is, yes, you are absolutely right. People in the state that are paying all these bills need to start having a little bit more influence and a little greater discretion as it relates to what we are and are not willing as a state to spend $20,000 a year housing an inmate for violating. That's really, no matter how we want to cut it, that's the dialogue that we're having here. And if we leave all that power to the judges and the prosecutors that don't have to worry about balancing the state budget, they just present a bill. Hey, here we go. Here's another prisoner. Here's another prisoner. Here's another prisoner. You know, we're never going to be able to get control of that unless we want to really bite the bullet and say, okay, max up prosecutors and judges. Everything that's on the books, we want you to fully prosecute. Unless we're willing to bite the bullet and repeal some of those statutes, and I applaud the senator from the 10th bill that she introduced, but, you know, we didn't have any input over all that, and I don't feel comfortable with adopting a code that's written by prosecutors and defense attorneys, you know, so I'm going to have an amendment later to hopefully create an interim committee that can study the bill and have legislator input on that so that we can really get down to what the fundamental issue is in all these bills that we are talking about, the senator from the 8th, what you're talking about, what Judge Price talked about, which is a dialogue where instead of scoring political points on who's soft on crime and who's tough on crime and who's good and who's bad, where we have a dialogue where we get to the central issue of what as a state are our taxpayers and those that we represent in this state under this new dynamic of state revenues, under right-sizing state government to existing state revenues, are we willing to spend $20,000 a year housing a prisoner on? And I'll tell you, that $20,000 is not like this, holding steady. That $20,000 is at a 45-degree angle growing, and it'll be $30,000 in 2 years, 10 years, you know, who knows?
Well, we need to get smart on crime. We need to look at how much truly needs to be spent, but at the same time, how are we getting safer communities as a result of every one of those dollars being spent? And what we're seeing is just shipping more to the warehouse without a real data-driven analysis of who's going and why and what's happening when they get there isn't making our communities any safer at all.
Yeah.
So I think we need to look at some changes. As for this amendment, you know, I don't know. what it would accomplish except to increase the workload on probation and parole officers. Because
now, what it'll do is it'll give the judge the information, and the judge is going to revoke them.
Well, the
sui sponte.
The judge.
So the judge is just going to enter a motion now when he sees enough of these reports going off that he's going to enter an order sui sponte that just says, you're boom, revoked. Or I now issue sui sponte a show cause order because I've got enough information, whereas the state, through the probation and parole office and the Department of Public Safety or Corrections, whoever they report to, was using a little bit of discretion to say, hey, I understand, but I'm not sending him to the judge that I know is just going to hit the go button.
I see all that. But what I mean is within the mechanism of the bill, I mean, the judge within this bill is given the opportunity up front to decide this person, if they fit in these various categories, is or is not a candidate for the earned lines credit. And this, you know, this judge, I guess, wants to do the job of the probation parole officer, the job of the prosecutor, and the job of the judge.
And I want to be, and I want to stop here. I understand what you're doing, and because it's subject to appropriations, I think I can support it. What I'd really like to do is just pass a bill that said a probation period will not be greater than 2 years, and then be done. So that is my preferred approach. That's where we're going to get most of the lion's share of the savings. I'm hoping, you know, I'm not all rosy fuzzy with what you're doing in parts two and three, and I don't want to lead you on with all of that stuff, but I'm willing to let it come to a vote and go through. But what if I had my druthers, I would just vote no probation period could be greater than 2 years and roll on. But
I
anyway.
Get it. But I want the 2 years to make the person less likely to be an offender at the end.
Yeah. Thank you.
Senator from 23rd.
Withdraw my amendment.
Back on the motion, the senator from Lawrence, senator from the 11th. What purpose are you seeking recognition?
Dan Carter, Senator from Lawrence.
Senator from Lawrence, you yield?
I yield.
Senator, I had kind of postponed talking to you about the base bill. I don't know what our schedule is tonight. I sense the senator from First has an amendment or something. I just want to take a quick 5 minutes, if I could, and just ask you some things since we didn't really get to
what we're here for.
The bill. Okay? Okay. Just so I understand, you're creating a system of compliance credits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is all, everything is under felonies that are C&D felonies and also under Chapter 195, which is mainly drug offenses. Is that correct?
Well, okay, the folks who are defined here are basically nonviolent, non-lifetime supervised sex offenders who are C&D felony offenders. And then even within that universe, we carve out some additionals down here in the bottom of page 4 that are not eligible for earned compliance credits. Those are those convicted of aggravated stalking, sexual assault, deviant sexual assault, assault on a sexual, blah, 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 through the top of page 5. And then there in the next paragraph 2 is a list of crimes. There are 9 classes of those crimes where even in that situation, the judge or prosecutor can make a motion that the offender is not a good candidate for the earned compliance credit. So we're trying to build in safeguards to make sure anyone that's an ongoing safety threat isn't getting the pass. But for those who are nonviolent offenders, we're more efficient with them and hopefully making them less likely to be a reoffender.
And the compliance credits, there are only to felonies under the bill, no misdemeanors? Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Are there any people convicted of misdemeanors in jail?
They'd be in the county jail.
In the county. Okay. All righty. All right. And then could you tell me about how a compliance credit, what circumstances is, how is it revoked?
If you've got probation parole officer or the prosecutor can file the motion that there was a violation of the terms of probation.
So the amendment, for example, that the senator from 23rd just withdrew would have potentially had a great significance on that because even though we're not dealing with the Senator from 23rd's amendment, he withdrew it. I could see a circumstance to where the way he had it written, it whenever any violation would go back to the judge.
Yeah, the judge, and at that point, the judge could make his own.
A potential outcome of that, if that amendment had gone on or had been offered and became part of this, would be that probably more judges would revoke more of these credits more often to more people.
We've heard a lot of generalizations about folks in different positions, but I will say there have been a lot of people from all the positions we've talked about that were involved in this working group process that were supportive of all these concepts. So I think we will see a lot of individual prosecutors around the state, judges around the state, that like these changes and will implement them diligently. But there is the potential under that amendment that you would have a judge in some jurisdiction somewhere that just wants everybody to stay longer.
Right. Okay. All right. Could you explain to me the shock time, what you're doing with the 120-day shock time in the bill?
Okay, with that provision, let me flip back to that page. This says, again, for that defined universe of offenders that are nonviolent and not falling within. Let me just get to that page. In that defined universe of offenders who have probation or parole violations, rather than being shipped for their entire sentenced term that's hanging over their head, they would go for 120 days, and that would serve as a shock time to get their attention, as a deterrent, but also, while they're there, they could participate in the drug program, the alcohol program, whatever program might hopefully rehabilitate.
And the shock time, to fit the other part of the bill, is designated for C&D felonies and drug offenses? Is that pretty much correct?
Those are C&D, nonviolent offenses, also with those exclusions that we discussed, and it would not apply to...
would not be considered in the 120.
Right.
You're taking those out of the 120-day. So the effect would be that the 120-day shock time is reserved for more serious offenses? Is that...
Right, those that are posing a threat to the community.
Okay. Can I ask you about the fiscal note?
Mm-hmm.
Why are those numbers so seemingly so small?
Well,
it seemed like from what we're doing that there would be, it sounds like from what there could be a potential of millions of dollars, and I remember from the 2020 committees when we talked about this, and yet I was a little bit, it is what it is, but I just was wondering why it was $168,000. It sounds like we're doing a lot more than that.
Well, that's, we're looking at year one there, and if we look out, we've got projections of net savings. If this entire bill is implemented, there are projections that by FY17, in that year, we'd have savings ranging from almost 1.2 million to almost 3.7 million. And again, I think that's a disappointingly low number, and that if we see these things work, hopefully we can expand on these programs, hopefully also pass legislation in whatever form that the Senator from the 10th introduced, and achieve greater savings. But one of the challenges that we have in implementing this bill is, we're in fiscal times where there's no new money to spend. Thank you. So we cannot spend the money until we've saved some money. So that's making us very incrementally implement some of the provisions of this bill. And as I said, some of it just starts out as a localized pilot project. So I think taken to its full development, we see bigger savings, but we've got to save it to spend it.
Okay. One last question, if I could go back to the compliance credits.
Sure.
They can't accumulate this while they're waiting for trial, is that right? That time isn't counted?
You mean waiting for a violation hearing?
Right.
Right. The accrual of credits is suspended during the pendency of a violation hearing or a revocation hearing.
And is that a problem in any way? Could that be a lengthy amount of time? Because they are incarcerated, right? Even though they're waiting.
Not always. I mean, sometimes they remain out waiting for their hearing.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry.
Senator from Lawrence, does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the First, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. To briefly inquire the senator from Lawrence.
Senator from Lawrence, do you yield?
I do.
He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, thank you, and I don't want to prolong this. I dropped an amendment, and I'm not planning on offering the amendment. You and I had a conversation about this issue. It's been an issue that has been of concern for me for a number of years, just because of situations that have occurred in my district with individuals where I believe that a law that we currently have on the books is unjust and unconstitutional. And it is felony non-support. And what my amendment would do, if it were to go on this piece of legislation or if it were to be introduced, it would address the fact that we currently, and I had the Department of Corrections put this these numbers together for me, we currently have incarcerated in our system in Missouri 180 individuals that are in prison for criminal non-support. And in essence, as the discussion that we had, Senator, they are in prison for a debt. They're in prison for a civil judgment that was issued by a court. And because of, in many of these cases, or at least the cases that I'm familiar of, you have maybe a father that's doing the best he can in supporting his children, and stays in the construction business, and he hasn't, you know, been on the job, you know, for the last year and a half because of the economy, right? Gets behind on his child support and finds himself in prison. And I know that there's certainly cases here where we've got deadbeats that aren't supporting their children, but my real concern, Senator, is that we have a law on the books that is actually, I believe, contrary to our Constitution, that under Article 1, Section 11, it says imprisonment for debt, that no person shall be imprisoned for debt except for the non-payment of fines and penalties imposed by law. And as we discussed, Senator, I don't believe that putting somebody in prison for a civil judgment from a court falls into that, either one of those categories. Would you agree with that as far as fines and penalties?
Well, you know, I've never seen a legal analysis of the constitutionality of this provision, which I confessed to you earlier. And in most instances in my law practice in the part of the state where I've been, it is the very rare exceptional case that those you get to that incarceration actually happening. Ordinarily, you go through, you know, a contempt, show cause contempt action on the dissolution case, or you know, periods of probation where a term is you make your payment. So it's in my observation of cases only the frustrated last resort, because the prosecutor, the judge, everyone realizes if this non-paying obligated parent is in prison,
they can't support their children, right?
My observation is pretty sparingly employed, but I understand the concerns that you're expressing.
But Senator, I guess I want to reiterate, though, that currently, according to the figures that were given to me by Corrections, we have 180 individuals, 180, all right, that are incarcerated at $20,000 a year, so it's costing the taxpayers, and that individual is not able. And another thing, I had them break this out so that these are 180 individuals that have no other charges. They don't have any other charges. I've got a breakdown in here where you have non-support with other convictions, okay, where they, you know, they had broken some other crime. So these are non-violent offenders that are in prison and not able to support their children, even though they may have been supporting them, but because of the loss of a job or getting behind on their child support. I believe that what the law currently says, once you go over 5,000 in the rears, 5,001, you know, they can come to your front door, put you in cuffs, and take you off the hokey pokey. I'm very concerned about this, and I think this is just one area where we're looking at this globally, okay, about why we put people in prison.
Well, and I think the senator from the 10th just sent forward over 1,000 pages of proposed reorganization, reevaluation, reprioritization within our criminal code, and that would certainly be an appropriate place for this conversation and examination.
Right, and again, we're dealing with, we're in crisis mode as far as our budget. And I've served on appropriations for 8 of the 10 years that I've been serving in this body on both sides of the building, and I see this number continue to skyrocket. And because of, and I don't want to put all the burden here, but because of different decisions from the courts over the years, the amount of services that have to be provided to those we incarcerate continues to pile upon each other as far as health care the different services that need food services, the different things that we have to do because of these decisions. It's making it more and more costly, not less costly.
I agree. And a lot of it's being mandated from...
Thank you for that. Thank you for your work on this, Senator. And again, in the Senator from the 10th, I look forward, to that process where we can really look at why and how many people that we're putting into prison in our state. Thank you.
Senator from Cape, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment.
Please send
it has
amendment
been
forward.
Distributed. I am sending it forward. I would ask unanimous consent to amend the amendment at the dais, making a technical correction, making the amendment that has been distributed that ends in .02S to be drafted to the Senate substitute. I move for its adoption.
Hearing no objection, the corrections will be made at the dais. Senator, would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. And for the benefit of the body, this is the amendment I distributed, .02S. What this amendment would do is work in conjunction with the senator from the 10th. She introduced a rewrite of the Missouri Criminal Code today that the prosecutors and the defense attorneys came up with, but we have not had an opportunity to have legislators involved in the process. So what I think we should do and what I respectfully submit to the Senate as a suggestion is to create this joint committee on the Missouri Criminal Code to be able to analyze what the Missouri Bar and defense attorneys and prosecutors came up with, have input from senators like the senator from the first on the issue that he dealt with, and I think it would be more appropriate to have that bill dealt with probably next year as opposed to this year once we've had a time to digest it. So what this amendment does is it creates the Joint Committee on Missouri Criminal Code. It lists members that would be part of it that could start off, could start from where the senator from the 10th introduced her bill and the hard work of the Missouri Bar and the prosecutors and the defense attorneys are, and to hopefully be in a position where they can get something passed next year. I don't think anyone that has been around this building honestly believes that we're going to rewrite Missouri's criminal code in one session. You know, we can't even get bills, doing much less audacious things passed in less than 4 or 5 sessions. So with that in mind, it's just to help into the future. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator McCabe has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Lawrence, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to very briefly speak in favor of the amendment. This is very similar to legislation that I filed as my first priority bill of this session. Speaking with those who had come together to draft largely the work product that the senator from the 10th sent forward earlier, they were concerned that if we create the joint interim committee too soon, it would doom any prospect of passing that bill this session. At this point, I think we're far enough along maybe to go ahead and include the language in this bill, which actually was discussed by the working group that brought forward the suggestions that resulted in the bill we're debating right now. I think the amendment is good. I commend the senator from the 10th for her work on both of the working groups that brought forward this bill and the bill that she sent forward before.
Senator from the 10th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Speak in favor of the amendment.
Mr.
President, I agree with the Senator from Cape and the Senator from Lawrence. I think that this amendment is a good complement to everything that we're doing here today, and I think it helps us move forward on cost savings and on public safety issues.
Senator from the Cape has moved to the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Mr. President, with this bipartisan love, I'm questioning my stances now in the Missouri Senate, but I appreciate the colleague's support, and I renew my motion.
Senator from Cape has moved to adopt Senate Amendment Number 2. All in favor of that motion, say aye. Okay. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 2. We're now back on the motion of the Senator from Lawrence. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close on the substitute.
The Senator from Lawrence has moved to the adoption of Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 699. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize to close.
A double close, Mr. President.
Double close. All in favor, aye. Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, you are recognized for the perfection motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move, again, that the Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 699 be perfected and ordered printed.
Heard the motion from Senator from Lawrence. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
Close. Thank you, Mr. President.
The Senator from Lawrence has moved that Senate Bill 699 is amended by the Senate substitute be declared perfected and ordered printed. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate will be the order of business of announcements.
We're on the order of business of announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from 23rd. All in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned under the rules.